If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you.
You probably recognize that voice. It's Jim Croce. A song after song after song in the 1970s. For a long time, his son, AJ, has been out there performing, has a career of his own. But when asked, he says, ever since the age, well, of maybe 10 years old, to perform his dad's songs, he has declined until now. So the big question will be, why until now? But my question first, AJ, is what do you typically do on Sunday afternoons when you're not on the radio? Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Well, I usually read or watch old movies or practice, same as most people.
Watch old movies, he says, and it makes me think of this question. Who, aside from your dad, take him out of the picture, maybe the most influential musicians to you, for your career?
You know, ironically, as much as I love my father's music, I was more influenced by folks like Ray Charles and Otis Redding, and of course, you know, a lot of the R&B and early rock and roll, Little Richard, and the things that I found in my dad's record collection. Now, that doesn't mean I don't love his music, but you know, I'm a piano player first and foremost before a guitarist, so it was just a natural thing. And having lost my sight at about four for about 6 years, I got turned on to all the blind keyboard players, Ray and Stevie Wonder and Art Tatum and all of that stuff. So it was that was the path that I, you know, started down.
Well, your story is, first of all, you lose your dad. You were how old at the time?
I was two.
Yeah, and that's when your dad, Jim Croce, perished so early in his career in a plane crash. But then you say you lost your sight a couple of years later. How did that happen?
Well, it's a long story. I don't know if we have time.
Well, the short version of that
story.
It was
some abuse that happened at that time from a boyfriend of my mother's is what caused it. And it took about 6 years to recover partially from it. I got part of my vision back in my left eye, so that's good.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a very difficult start for a young man here. And at what point did you decide, I am going to be a musician?
Oh, from the very beginning. As soon as I could beat on a drum or strum a guitar or really reach the piano, which was the thing that was most amazing to me, even before I was two, as soon as I could walk, I was reaching for the piano keys. And so that was really it for me. It came, obviously, I had to practice a lot, like everyone, you know, 6-8 hours a day. But it was something I loved, and the more I practiced, the more I improved and knew what I needed to practice, like anything.
You know, I've talked to so many musicians over the years, and so many musicians have said, really, the same answer as you just gave me, is that I began at the age of 4 or 5, and I've always known this is something that appeals. Do you think some of that is hardwired, that you are born with a certain inclination?
I don't know. I think maybe the inclination for hard work, more so than a gift of one sort or another. I think there are some people that undoubtedly just have a gift. I think by and large, it's the inclination to work hard and to practice for things.
Well, you mentioned Ray Charles and a couple of others who have lost their sight or have had no sight ever that are performers, mm-hmm. and you've performed with several of those, haven't you, including Mr. Charles?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? He's
a
legend.
Yeah, I played with him there in Chicago.
In Chicago,
it was
no
wonderful,
less.
And he was so kind to, at Ravinia, outside the city. Yeah, it was great. He was really supportive. He stood on the side of the stage when I would play, and he was just like, gave me a hug after the after the show. Very supportive. You know, I was terrified because, you know, I'd been listening to him and playing along with his record since I was, you know, a little kid. And so that was, you know, that was a thrill, and playing with all of those heroes of mine, James Brown and Aretha and Willie Nelson, and I mean all kinds of music, the Neville Brothers I played with a lot, and Taj Mahal, and all those early years were mostly R&B and soul artists. The first really was Floyd Dixon, and then B.B. King. But I kind of got my recording, my first opportunity to record ever was from a guy named Cowboy Jack Clement, who was the staff producer at Sun from about 53 to 60 and worked with Elvis and all those artists, Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee, and Roy Orbison, and most notably Johnny Cash for about 50 years. And wow. He had... heard from a woman named May Axton that he should hire me. So he flew me to Nashville, and I walked in the door, and Jerry Lee Lewis walked out the front door as I was walking in. I didn't realize at 17 I was sitting in for Jerry Lee, you know. And that was kind of a year later, I got a call to go out with B.B. King, and that was it. I was off and running. I wasn't signed. I didn't have a manager or agent or anything like that. But by the time we had gotten down the West Coast from Vancouver to Southern California, I had a manager and an agent, and it all kind of started really quickly and felt like I got shot out of a cannon.
Wow. You know, I mean, do you sometimes pinch yourself? I could have stopped you about 12 times in that answer and said, B.B. King, what? Aretha Franklin, what? You know, and James Brown, really? Him? You know, I mean, that you not only knew these folks, you actually performed with them or in front of them as an opening act. I mean, that is quite incredible. It says somewhere here that you got your first gig, you were 12 years old, you were paid $20 for a bar mitzvah?
Yeah, it was a bat mitzvah, and I played it, you know, Ray Charles song. I played an old Memphis Slim song. I played just a couple of, you know, little rock and roll things like Fats Domino or something like that, you know, and Chuck Berry, yeah.
Oy vey.
Yeah. So
but what I want to know though
that was it.
Yeah, but why did you decide now? And we'll talk about this when we come back after all these years to play your dad's music. And also, I know you were on the air a couple of nights ago with John Landecker, and you said that, my gosh, John told me a story that blew me away. I want to hear what that story was. We'll hear that and more.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, when we come back on WGN with A.J. Croce.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I got a name. I've got a name.
That's A.J. Croce singing Jim Croce's music. WGN 121, and here is A.J. Croce. Our phone number, of course, 312-981-7200. You can call or you can text. Text line, people are asking essentially what my next question is. I'm glad you're singing your dad's music. Why now? It could have been 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 months ago. Why now?
30.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I guess there were a lot of things. You know, I'd been offered to do that since I was probably 15 or 16 years old, but I didn't think there was any integrity in it. And I really, you know, wanted to make my own way and sort of do it on my own terms. And then, of course, starting in the, you know, late 90s, I helped take over the publishing side of things. And I had been doing that for myself for almost 10 years at that point and was ready for it. And so I was working behind the scenes to get the music heard and to, you know, maintain the legacy. So when you hear it on a on a TV show or in a film somewhere, you know, I'm helping to keep that music alive. And that felt really good to me. There were a few things that did it. I was listening to an old tape of his. You know, my father's career was about 18 months. And before that, while he'd played for, you know, almost 10 years before that, he would just do it on the weekends. And so found this old tape. He was practicing songs he was going to play that weekend. And these were songs, I mean, I was in my mid-30s at the time. And these were songs I'd played since I was a kid, since I was a teenager. And Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, and there was Mississippi John Hurt, there was Bessie Smith, there was Fats Waller. But these things were, these were like the B-sides, the rarities, you know, the deep cuts of these artists. It wasn't the famous songs everyone knows. Mm-hmm. And they were the exact same songs I had played, and I got chills. And realized we had more in common than I ever imagined. And so that was the starting point. And then for what would have been his 70th birthday about 10 years ago, I did a show and invited a bunch of friends, and we sang a bunch of his songs. And it was so much fun to see the audience and how much they liked it. And I thought, you know, this could be a fun thing to do at some point. And, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I started sort of slowly throwing these Croce plays, Croce shows out there. And I just found it was really wonderful. You know, I got to share my father's music. Most people never saw it live. I get to share my music, and also, really importantly, the music that connects us. So it's all about the connections. And that made a lot of sense to me. And it allows me to change the show up every night, because not only do I have his songs, but I have 30 years of my stuff and thousands of songs that influenced us.
Well, you know, in preparing for this interview, went to YouTube and saw a whole lot of your dad's performances. And, you know, you get that feeling, you know, I've got a smile on my face now. And you recall those songs. I played them on the radio with a certain fondness,
yeah.
You know. And the audience must have, I imagine, the same recognition. I mean, you see out there. I would think when you, if you play something like Big Bad Leroy Brown, people are literally singing along.
People are. And, you know, I mean, people are laughing, they're crying, it's emotional. I think there's obviously the nostalgia of it, but there's more than that, you know, because I think my job is to entertain them. You know, I tell them the stories behind the songs, and I tell them about myself, about him, things that people might not know and are interested in. And it just makes the whole show a lot of fun to perform.
Well, I don't know you, and I've never seen you perform, but I want to correct you. I think your job is to, yes, entertain them, but also touch them. And you do that even in performances I've seen on YouTube when you're not singing your dad's music. You're singing soul songs, you know, from the heart. Well, they're called soul music. It's called soul music for a reason. And you do touch people, man.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I thank you.
All right,
you know, you wanted to know about
yes,
what John,
yes,
John told me, and I had never heard this before, which is rare because I've heard a million stories from different DJs around the country as I've traveled for the last 30 some years, and he told me that when the radio promotion person that was coming to present my dad's first album, which is 50 years old now, which I'm celebrating this year, for You Don't Mess Around With Jimmy, it wasn't a radio promo guy. It was a nun in a habit.
What?
who said, I think you're really going to like this album. And the whole presentation was so surprising to John that he put it on immediately.
That is crazy.
And Don't Mess Around With Jim came on.
A nun and John Landecker in the same room at the same time back then doesn't make much sense in of itself.
In 1972.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that story because I'm old enough to remember it was a dying art then, the record guys that would come over to actually personally promote songs. I mean, there were such people. That was their job to do that. Do you have a favorite
song? That was their job.
Do you have a favorite song of your dad's?
No, I don't. You know, like any great songwriter, there's so many good ones, and it really depends on the mood. You know, I don't have a favorite artist or a favorite song in the world. There's just too many great pieces of music out there to be preferential. I just love good music, and of all varieties, you know. So, I mean, there's ones that are personal. Of course, Time in a Bottle is personal, but, you know, Operator is so great, and Tomorrow's Going to Be a Brighter Day is such a cool song. Box Number 10 has always been one of my favorites, and Lover's Cross, and these are, some of them are less known, but, you know, Rapid Roy, I mean, all those character songs are so good. The lyrics are so well thought out, so well put together, and as a writer, it's inspiring.
I think they're timeless too. I want to ask you about your website, but very quickly, before I do, what was it about farmhouses? You know why I'm asking this?
What about
the no. LPs that I recall? Yes, vinyl. The images were of farmhouses or places on a farmhouse. Am I crazy?
The Jim Croce albums? No. My folks, you know, rented a number of different places, but most notably a place in Lindale, Pennsylvania, outside of Philly. And it was just a small little part of a farmhouse. But in that apartment there, that's where, you know, my dad wrote pretty much most of the first two and part of the third album.
All right,
so it was there that Paul Wilson, who was the photographer, who was a friend, came out, and he just came over and took pictures right there at the house.
And they were used for album covers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or what we would today, I don't know what you call them. Back then, they were called album covers. How do people find you, A.J. Croce? Not only find you, but literally find you where you're going to be performing.
You can go to my website and see the touring at ajcrocemusic.com. You can go to Instagram at AJ Croce, or find me on Facebook and see me there. Yeah, I'll be touring all through the fall, and I'll certainly be in Chicago at some point in the next 6 months or so.
Oh, man, if you know when you are going to be here, please, please tell your people, or you can personally let me know. I want to know, and we'll talk to you maybe even in studio.
That would be wonderful, man. I will absolutely let you know.
Please. There he goes, A.J. Croce. or shall I say Adrian James? Have I got that right?
You got it correct.
Well, man, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Both are equally correct.
Okay.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate
your
time.
Thank you.